morning and welcome to the Sports Polygamy Podcast. It's the 19th of October 2012 and I'm Eric George. Today I'll be speaking with a number of guests about the NBA season that's just about to begin. We break down both conferences and have a little moral dilemma to discuss as well at the end. Hope you enjoy it. To kick things off, we're going to start in the Eastern Conference, and to help me with this, I've invited on Sam Monahan, one of the fine men at NBA Nation Australia, which you can find at NBA Nation Oz. How are you, Sam?
Doing well, Eric. How about yourself?
I am good, thank you. Excited for the season?
Mate, I cannot wait. 2 weeks and counting.
Yeah, I guess I've noticed you've been watching a bit of preseason, so that's a good sign that you're psyched, because if you can put yourself through that, you can put yourself
through. My league pass button has been worn out already.
All right, we've got plenty to get through, so let's dive straight in. Starting, we're going to go division by division and kind of figure out who we think is going to make the playoffs. So starting at the Atlantic Division, obviously you've got Boston, Brooklyn, New York Knicks, Philadelphia, and, of course, my Raptors. So who do you think wins the division, Sam?
I think you can't go past Boston, but I think you're looking at probably 3 to 4 games difference at the end of the day between them and probably someone like Brooklyn.
Yeah.
I'm calling it now. I think we're going to see a big change from the Nets this year.
Yeah, me too. I've got Boston, Brooklyn 1-2 in this division. It's mental that this Atlantic division has to be the most competitive of the
it's the best Eastern Conference one, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm thinking it could be potentially the best in the whole NBA. I mean, of course, I'm going to be a little bit higher on the Raptors than some, but there's a chance that you could have all five teams in the top 10 in the East.
Oh, for sure. I mean, the East is – stick with us, listeners, because the East is quite terrible from the, the bottom, the top four down, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's what's going to make it so competitive. Mm-hmm. Some of the moves at Philly, New York, Boston, Brooklyn, even guys like Toronto – and, to a small extent, Charlotte made in the offseason, they're going to make them better or much, much worse. So
Yeah. So looking out Boston, it's really all about Rondo now, isn't it? I think
I can't see it changing. It's Rondo or bust.
Yep.
Team.
Okay.
They've got to give him the reins. This is the year he turns up and he comes along and goes, this is my team. And he's got some good young guys beneath him. He's got Fab Melo that they drafted. You've got Jared Sullinger who he's brought in. He needs to gather up around them. Make them his sort of foot soldiers, and then bring in Avery Bradley into the fold, because he's a guard like him, and just start forming a strong unit around him, because he is, generation 2.0 of these championship Celtics.
Yeah. And you're seeing a little bit of youth come through as well with him at this point, which is exciting. The only thing that worries me a little bit about Boston is their ability to protect the hoop. I mean, the height that they have now, I mean, they're really relying on Fab Melo and Darko. Because although KG is good, he does like to range around a little bit. He's not really going to stand under there a whole lot and take a beating anymore.
You're right. And I'm not sure what Bass is going to bring to the table in terms of that hoop protection as well.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're relying on a first-year rookie to be part of the team that's defending the basket, you're in trouble.
Yeah. So, yeah, but Boston up the top, Brooklyn in second. Personally, I actually think the Knicks and Philly will also sneak in the bottom of the
really? And so although if we're talking playoffs, I can see Philly, New York sneaking into 7 and 8. But I don't know what you're gonna see from Toronto. And I'm not real warm on Philly either.
Really? Yeah, it's gonna be interesting. They've got a lot of moves to adjust to, obviously. They've basically rejigged the entire look of their team now that they've got a gigantic front court with Bynum, Thad, and Hawes, and some, athleticism outside, but it's really, they're an inside-out team now.
Exactly, and they kind of reshaped their entire image in one off-season, and I'm not so sure that's a good thing. I think the formula they were on last year with Williams and Iggy all running the team, basically, and then you had the brilliant youth of Evan Turner and Holiday. Holiday was electric last year.
Mm-hmm.
Or that bringing in guys like Brown, Richardson, and Young are really the answer or the solution to even replace those guys, even if you're looking at like a money ball approach, we're looking at a statistical approach. I don't think they're the players, and I'm not sure that the Philly management have made the right move.
We'll have to wait and see. I still think one of the big question marks over them last year was consistency, is they had great stretches and had some pretty horrible stretches as well. And I think we could see that a little bit this year, if only just because it's going to be some teething problems as they basically have to retool both ends of the court completely at this point.
That's right. And also, who's going to step up and be Bynum's partner in crime? Is it going to fall on Holiday, who it sort of fell on last year? Or do you see a little bit more from Hawes, maybe a little bit from Thaddeus, and obviously Evan Turner out wide?
Okay, so do you agree that the Knicks will finish higher than Philly, though, in that division?
Only through lack of options, though, yeah. And again, yeah. I think that one will only be, you know, maybe 5 to 10 different games difference in it.
It's going to be a big logjam up the top for sure. So, next division, Central, Chicago, Cleveland, Detroit, Indiana, and Milwaukee. Indiana, I like them a lot. I'm going to stick them up the top.
Yep, definitely. I've got them at the top, and I've got them coming in second in the conference.
Woo!
But by far and away, probably by they'll probably be 10 to 12 games clear of whoever the third seed are.
Just because the division's easier, or why?
I think they're going to have a lot of easy games. Look at the East. They're going to beat down on Washington, Orlando, Charlotte, Detroit, Cleveland, Milwaukee. There's an easy 20 or 30 wins there. Then you steal a game or two off Toronto, Philly. You pick up an easy win against Utah or Minnesota and Sacramento in the West, and all of a sudden you're starting to creep up to 35 wins. You can easily see them getting over 40, creeping into the low 50s.
Yeah, I like them a lot. I think they're really deep. They're balanced. They've got a variety of scoring options. The man has two of my names, so I love Paul George, and I think he's going to continue to grow into a future star in the league. I think the experience they got in the playoffs last year will help them a lot. I think that'll really help their growth this season. Still question marks over Granger, to my mind, in some extent. You know, it seems like sometimes he's not really their option, and maybe this might pass him by a little bit if Paul George keeps stepping up.
Exactly, and I think George is probably the guard you want to keep your eyes on.
Yeah.
Granger sort of showed last year he can be the man, but like you said, he's a little bit inconsistent. But I think this is a proper team,
mm-hmm.
so that's going to – they gel a lot better than someone like the Celtics. So I'll romp at home. I think the biggest question in this division, and probably the biggest question in the East, is what's going to become of the Bulls?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Rose is going to be missing for a fair chunk of the early season, correct?
That's right. Well, he's talking about getting back after the All-Star game, and that's – I think if everything goes really well. He was seen a couple of days ago, I think, you know, at shoot around before in one of the games where they played Milwaukee, but, you know, he was just stretching and, you know, shooting a ball. I wouldn't think about drafting him in fantasy leagues or anything like that. Getting back, I think he's gone. But it's going to be good for this team because when he comes back next year – they're going to have learned to play without him, and they're just going to slot him in, and he'll be a point-scoring machine, and they'll be an incredible team in 2014.
Do you think? I just think they're so old. Like, who's going to be doing it for them in 2013? They're just like, Boozer can't keep doing it forever. I mean, perhaps Deng can continue to grow, but they lost so much in the offseason. I think it was really disappointing.
I think their future kind of lies on Deng and Gibson.
Yeah.
And that's where they have to look.
And Noah as well, I guess.
No, I think we've seen his ceiling, though. He's good, but he's not great. He's like Boozer. You know, when Boozer was playing before the Bulls, he was really great. He was chasing a contract. But the new Boozer we've got, he's not as good as we hoped he would be, and he's just not performing to his best. He's going to be caught out this year a lot as well. But
yeah, it was a joke the way he played in the playoffs last year. I mean, when he had the chance to become the legit first scoring option for Chicago, he crapped the bed pretty badly. The thing that really worries me about Chicago is just the amount of size they lost in the offseason. This was a team that obviously Thibodeau likes to build around around defense. And, you know, Asik might be slow, but he's so important to their defensive structure. And just the strength and kind of grit that they might have lost a little bit really worries me for the structure of this team.
I think they let him walk way too easily.
Yeah.
And I think that the Rockets got a good steal out of him. He's not a franchise player, but he's someone that worked really well for Chicago. But it's a two-team race, you know. Milwaukee will, you know, be here or there, but there won't be any factors. Cleveland and Detroit, well, you know, look, they're still rebuilding. End of story.
Yeah, Milwaukee are just a locker room disaster waiting to happen, I think. So I agree, but I'll have some good stretches. But it's really Indiana and Chicago in the Central Division. So moving on to the final one, the Southeast. Atlanta, Charlotte, Miami, Orlando, Washington, the obvious one of the lot, really.
Exactly. It's the heat all the way.
Yeah.
I'm just romping home in the East with looking at maybe a 60-win season.
Yeah. I mean, if we want to play devil's advocate here and try and pick holes in it, they kind of are still – I mean, they're still very vulnerable in terms of age, this team. Their bench could look pretty scary pretty quickly if a couple of guys go down.
Oh, exactly. You're looking at – you know, you watch Allen – you watch Miller, you watch Battier go down, or any just two of those three.
Well, even if they don't go down, even if they start getting banged up and have to deal with niggly stuff that slows them down and, you know, perhaps lose the fluidity that they rely on.
You're right. Well, then who are you going to fall back on? Haslam, Josh go, I don't think. It's not who you want to. But we saw that when Bosch went down in the finals, they managed to get through it.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, it's not a deep team, but LeBron is just such a powerful player. He's positionless now. You know, you can play him at, you know, play him at point guard if you want. You can play him at small forward, power forward if you really want. Play him at center. He's got that big body. He's a positionless player now. He can just rotate through.
I don't know. I think that we saw it a little bit last year against the Thunder, but the Thunder are also a team that, whilst they do have Ibaka and Perkins, neither of them could play significant minutes down the stretch. So I'll be interested to see if they can pull the same tactic against a team like the Lakers, for example, who have significant size that they can rely on to do stuff at both ends. Because, you know, but at the same time, we've heard a lot during the playoffs last year about how LeBron was getting worn out by having to play center, and he didn't really like it. I think he still gravitates towards the wing.
And that's probably where he belongs, on the wing, but it's not saying that he can't. I mean, you look at their depth at center and forward. You've got Bosch, Anthony Pittman from last year, chucking. I think you've got James Jones and Rashad Lewis. They pulled from Washington, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
There's five big bodies you can rotate before you get to LeBron. So that keeps him happy. They're subpar to okay. They'll do. There's not many true centers in the league anymore, so that's not really a problem for them. It's not really a problem for anyone unless you're really playing against the Lakers or the Spurs as so much this year.
Yeah. Yeah, they're certainly the, you know, it's pretty hard to make a case against them, and I think they'll cruise to the top of their division and probably the top of the East as well. We'll get to the final standings in the East in a sec, but out of the Southeast, I see Atlanta perhaps sneaking through as well as the only other team.
I think they're sneaky good this year, the Hawks. I mean, sure, they had to give up Joe Johnson to Brooklyn, but they've got an okay team of sort of wily little veterans. You've still got Josh Smith, now Horford, from your original Hawks of 4 or 5 years ago. Then you chuck in Korver, Deshaun Stevenson, Devin Harris, Teague. And, you know, that's a really good core of players. You chuck in Lou Williams from Philly. He's going to, you know, drive to the basket every other night of the week.
Mm. Yeah, Williams and Devin Harris are a very tasty little combination on the outside for sure. And obviously you've got two pretty smart interior players in Horford and Smith still. So I think they're well constructed. I'm not totally sure about their depth. Like, I like Kyle Korver. I've always, you know, thought he was a pretty solid player. But you would have thought that Chicago was such a good situation for him. It was kind of surprising that he didn't do more. So I have to wonder about what they'll get out of him.
He's a little bit old, isn't he, as well? So, again, you know, that depth could be a problem for the Hawks, but that's always been a problem for them. So it's nothing new, and they don't know they're going to improve it. But I like them just basically because of lack of competition. But my big mover in the East might be the Wizards. I quite like what they
bring.
Whoa! I don't see them you know, I think they'll get off the bottom of the basement this year, at least. You know, I like Ariza. I love Wall. I'm excited by Beal. I'm not sure what he's going to bring, but he was great in college. And then I love Nene. I loved him as a Nuggets fan. And I think, you know, they're going to shake some cages this year.
Okay. It's intriguing. So why don't you give me 1 through 8, your prediction for the East standings?
3 through 8, you're looking at 1. You've got Miami. 2, Indiana. Then it starts to get a little bit hazy, and these are probably all interchangeable. You look in Boston and Brooklyn for 3 and 4. They're the top 4 seeds. Mm-hmm. And then 5, you've got Atlanta, my dark horse. 6, I see Chicago still sneaking in, somehow sort of scraping just over 40 wins. I know you're not so keen on them, but I think I'll get enough scalps. 7, you've got the Knicks with Melo and co. And then closing out, your top 8, you've got Philadelphia just sneaking in over Milwaukee and Washington.
Yeah, I had Chicago at 6 as well, just because I think, even though I'm worried about them, that's just, I mean, one falling from 1st to 6 is still a pretty pretty precipitous fall for them. So yeah, I had Miami, Boston, Indiana, Brooklyn, New York, Chicago, Philly, Atlanta. I think Atlanta are good, but I think they're just perhaps one injury or one catastrophe away from being a really average team. Like, I'm a little bit worried about their depth. But it's interesting. I mean, I was really talking myself out of the East, and it gets a bit ugly after that. But that's a pretty exciting top 8 still.
It is. And it's like, you know, we might see Indiana topple someone like Boston this year. And that'll be their crowning moment. But I think you probably see the MVP come out of the East, and I think it'll probably be someone from that Miami team. I think it's probably going to be D Wade or LeBron.
You think Wade is in the mix for an MVP?
Yeah, I do. If his knee stays healthy, again, he's always in the mix. He's always in the top, you know, four or five best players. Maybe it's Rondo. Maybe this is his year that he busts out and he breaks out. Maybe this is the year that D Will actually gets the respect he deserves playing for Brooklyn.
Mm.
People will start noticing what he does, and you know, when he has 60-point games like he did last year.
Yeah, I wasn't a fan of Wade last year. I thought he killed the Heat in stretches, but yeah, I mean, it's stats matter, and he certainly accumulates them. I agree. I think Rondo can, if he lifts his scoring output and he becomes the lead scoring option on that team, while being, you know, a top two or three assist guy in the league, while being perhaps the best perimeter defender and point guards in the league, then that's a pretty on a Boston team that I think finishes second. I think that really propels him into the conversation.
You've got a great formula for an MVP right there, don't you?
Yeah, definitely. How about Rookie of the Year?
You can't go past Davis for the Hornets, can you?
Yeah.
Something catastrophic would have to happen if he was to fall apart. I mean, he looks incredible. He's had Olympic experience already. He's won the NCAA championship. I think you're looking at probably a good 10 rebounds a game from him. Maybe Drummond out of Detroit could sort of hang with him, just because he's such a big body, and you can see him making some Griffin-like plays, like, you know, some behind-the-back blocks, things like that. But I think it's going to be Davis. He's going to stand out like a sore thumb on that New Orleans team, and it's going to make him look so much better.
Yeah, and especially if he can make that New Orleans team a little bit better, so people can kind of point to the fact that he's improved the side. I agree. I think he's pretty close to a lock at this point, barring an injury.
You're right, exactly. And yeah, forwards and centers tend to win that award. You know, you got Amare, Griffin, Gasol, Duncan, all before him.
Yeah.
They're pretty mold.
Yeah. Terrific. All right. Well, thanks very much for coming on, Sam. I'm definitely looking forward to the season, and I'll look forward to potentially talking to you during the season to break down how it's all going.
Looking forward to it, Eric. Have a good season. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, mate. Bye-bye. Okay, and so for the next part of our preview, we're going to move on to the West, and I am joined by a man who so far is we've relied on for AFL analysis, but like a true sports polygamist, he spreads himself around. So Scotty Barbie, who you can follow at Scotty Barbie at Twitter, he does a whole bunch of stuff, so you can find his work there. How are you, mate?
Not too bad, slightly recovered. I've moved out of the fetal position since the Kevin Love injury news this morning, being a T-Wolves fan, so I'm up and about, but a bit of a somber day, but we'll charge on.
Well, that's a good segue, because we'll kick off in the Northwest, the division that has Denver, your Timberwolves, Portland, Oklahoma City, and Utah. So sticking with the format we've been going with, let's start off with the teams, you know, we're locking in for the playoffs. And this is a pretty easy one at the start, surely.
Yeah, you're going to go Oklahoma. There's absolutely no reason why you wouldn't.
Yeah, so they're easily the best in the division. It's an interesting one, because they took such a big step forwards last year in the you know, the potency they had on offense in the playoffs was really impressive. But there's still question marks over them, I think, for this season. You know, integrating Harden, as he, you know, became so important for them in big minutes last year. Are you concerned about their ability to keep him on the bench and useful?
Not really. I think the setup works pretty well. I think why it looked pretty negative in the finals was a lot to do with matchups and them all being new in that scenario, and especially Coach Scotty Brooks. His rotations, I think, were terrible, didn't utilize them the greatest. And I don't know, when you got Perkins out on the floor and there's no real center to kind of defend, it makes him obsolete. So I think they're going to be fine. I think Harden's going to come back, and he's not going to have a series like he did in the finals where he looked pretty terrible. Yeah, I think he'll be back to the franchise, well, not quite a franchise tag, but he'll be back to max money play.
It is remarkable how the youngest one of the big three seems like the most experienced. Like, he seems like the most composed of Durant, Westbrook, and himself.
Definitely, for sure. I did a piece on Harden last year, and I went through all of his high school numbers, college numbers, and his career in the NBA so far, and nothing ever deviates. It's always been the same level of production. Shooting percentages have been pretty much spot on regardless of the situation he's in. So he's a guy you can count on to really be level-headed and to always deliver. And the series against Miami in the finals was probably the one time where he failed to do that. So
what about second place in the Northwest? I'm going with Denver here. I think they look like they've fixed a couple of issues in the offseason, and I really like the look of this team.
Agree completely. Bringing in Iguodala is huge for this team. I think he's a perfectly complement what they have with Lawson running the point guard there. They're a run-and-gun system. That's all they do all day. It's going to be the same deal this time around. Athletic bigs in McGee, they bring across Randolph. That's going to be fun for George Karl, probably the two biggest head cases in the competition. But the poor guy's already had cancer. Now he's probably going to go through a lot of heart attacks with those on the floor. But this is a team, Denver. You know, they rank second. That is second worst defense. And they were pretty competitive until the Lakers with the seven games. So bringing Iguodala, I think, is going to be huge for them. Yeah, and I'd agree completely that they're probably the next in line in that division.
Okay, so I don't have Minnesota making the playoffs for obvious reasons. I mean, I was kind of sketchy on them before, but missing their two most important players for a reasonable portion of the season is a big, big whack. So you try and talk me into it.
Try and talk you into it? All right. I've been in the same thing. Like, I've gone through the depression phase and the acceptance phase, and now I'm trying to, I guess, maybe a little bit of denial. I'm getting through now and then trying to sugarcoat to go the glass half full route. So last year, yeah, when Rubio went down, we ended up 4-17, didn't win anything in April, looked pretty bleak. And this time around, yeah, we lose Kevin Love now to start the season, so it's not ideal. But I think getting rid of the guys we got rid of in Wes Johnson, Beasley, Anthony Randolph, a lot of these head case guys that don't really fit the mold of what we're doing. Having a veteran coach with Adelman, those guys who just hates playing rookies, it just didn't work. It was a bad fit across the board. So now we bring in Brandon Roy, who I've got to admit I'm pretty excited about. Had my doubts, obviously, with his knee injuries, being forced into retirement. It's not the greatest way to start off. But he's come in and watching him all preseason, and he's done Brandon Roy things, and he's looked like Brandon Roy. So I think the hard thing now with these injuries is going to be holding off, not playing him for large minutes, huge chunks of game time.
Adelman's a good coach, though. I think he'll be smarter than that.
Yeah, definitely. And I think bringing in guys like Alexei Shved, Andrei Kirilenko, Chase Bollinger, these are all guys who fill a need. Greg Siemensia comes in and replaces Darko. So I think the moves were made. Like, Khan gets a lot of bashing, but I think he's built just about almost the best team he can, considering we're a small market and the chips that we had to deal with to make moves. So with Love's injury, if he can get back in 4 to 5 weeks, he's going to miss, 9 to 12 games. If it's longer, if it's a 6 to 8 report, it's only going to be 15, 16 games. So, and our schedule is really friendly early as well. I had a look at that today. So I don't think it's as bad as it could be. If we can be around 500 or even better, all the tough teams we have, we get at home, and all the easy games are on the road. So.
Okay. All right. I'm still not totally in, but that's a pretty valiant effort. I'll give you that.
Well, we're talking about a guy, an all-star who's 25 points a game, does it all for us, rebounding machine. So the level of production is ridiculous from Love, and you're not going to be able to patch that up, especially a team like Minnesota, who's not a huge market, and he's a young all-star, he's our franchise guy. So it's a huge chunk, and Rubio as well. So, but I don't know. I think we can hang around, and if we get them back, and they're going to be close to 89% come New Year, and then we can kickstart 2013. Hopefully within touch or around the mark, we can make a run and make the playoffs. So, look, it's been, like you said earlier, nearly a decade of irrelevance. I think this team's built pretty well. We brought in Chase Bunnier too, instead of going young again and using our pick. This is a guy who shoots 40% from the three. He's a perfect fit for us, I think. So all the pieces are in place. It's just a matter of being healthy, and we've got one of the best coaches in the league for that situation too. So
yeah.
I still got high hopes. I think we can make some noise. We can progress this year again. And look, for me, the expectation is playoffs. I think the time's right. But,
wow. We'll
see what happens.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So what about basically, I think we can agree that Portland's out of the mix here. So what about Utah? Did you see them? Do you see them slipping in?
I do, yeah. I got Utah getting in, barely. I've got them in as a fifth seed. Key for them, huge front court, massive front court. Four big seven-footers, basically. Al Jefferson, Enes Kanter. You got Derek Favors there too, and then Paul Millsap. He's a bit shorter, but you can play the four, stretch four. That's a lot to handle for any team. Though their home court advantage has been massive. Last year, it was their backbone. I think, losing Devin Harris, the guys they lost weren't really that important to their system and what they do. Like, they brought in Mo Williams, who's going to stretch the defense. He can hit the three. I think the point guard rotation is okay with Williams, Tinsley, and Earl Watson, the veteran guys there, so they'll be serviceable. Gordon Hayward, solid wing defender, he's going to be another year older. I think he's a good fit for this team too. Marvin Williams too at Atlanta. Obviously a huge underachiever, one of the biggest draft busts of all time, but he can still produce and give them something. So Utah definitely, I think, are a lot for playoffs, purely on what they got in the front court. They're athletic. They can go low to Al Jefferson, who's 20-10 every night. There's really not too many question marks. It all looks to be pretty much in place for Utah. So given what they did last year, I'd expect them to grow again.
I disagree. I think you're right. Their front court's amazing. But I can't buy into who's passing them the ball. That's my problem.
It's true. Mo Williams is... he's not, you know, a pass-first point guard at all. He's not some, you know, someone to run the offense. I think we saw that in Cleveland with LeBron. I think, he's better on off the ball and coming off the bench being a spark plug, which is why I think he's seen a lot of Jamal Tinsley in the preseason. So that would be their huge weakness, would obviously be their point guard play.
Yeah. And just, who gets it done there is a big question mark for me. And it's very competitive around the bottom of the eight in the West. So I see them just missing out personally. But let's move along to the Pacific Conference, Pacific Division, sorry. So you've got Golden State, both LA teams, obviously Phoenix and Sac. So Lakers number one, easy?
Yeah, unfortunately, Lakers are number one.
Yeah, they'll cruise through. I mean, obviously they had the blockbuster offseason of anybody at this point. I mean, Brooklyn made some moves, but the Lakers just got scary. I think they've still got questions over age and durability, but they'll cruise through a lot of this season.
They plugged a lot of holes. They did well with great veteran signings and whatnot. And look, Nash did switch the cape and become the bad guy. I wasn't ready for it. Hating Steve Nash is really, really freaking weird. Dealing with Nash lying in the press over summer and then the whole Dwight thing happening and, I don't know, being like a career Laker hater. And it just seems like this is getting to the point where, okay, Kirby's now over the hump. They're stuck with Gasol's 20 mil contract for 3 more years. What do they do with Bynum? It was kind of looking like it was starting to fall apart a little bit. Kobe was terrible against OKC. I was like, you know, this is going to be it. This is finally the period where I get to shit on some Lakers, and it never came about. They retooled. It's what the Lakers do. They rebuild. They don't rebuild, sorry, they read every tool, so here we are again.
Yeah, they are very scary. You're right, though. It looked like they were done after consecutive pumpings in the postseason, but it's very frustrating. What about second in the Pacific Conference?
Second in Pacific, I think you got to go to the Clippers again. So both LA teams, they're getting the job done. Clippers got super old this offseason.
Yeah, I don't understand how they're going to get the minutes through all this team.
Well, that's it. There's a lot of guys who, you know, a little bit sketchy. Like Jamal Crawford, all he wants to do is shoot the ball. Matt Barnes, a little bit of a head case too there. It's not great. I think getting a whole summer camp in with CP3 as your point guard is huge. Lamar Odom put on about 5,000 pounds this offseason. So the pieces they got really good names, but... they're all so old, like Grant Hill as well is in there too, Willie Green. These aren't guys you can really rely on to constantly give production, be healthy, and I guess with Lamar Odom even being conditioned.
Yeah, and when you combine all that with the worst coach of any team that could make the playoffs this year, it's going to be a pretty weird locker room situation for the Clippers.
I'm still trying to figure out how that happened, how they got past Memphis in the playoffs. I don't know how they got through that with their coach. Sorry.
Yeah, it was weird.
Vinny Dell struggled at the best of times. I assume it kind of gets evened out with CP3 running the show. I don't think Vinny Dell really does anything. He's more of a puppet there. But
yeah, well, CP3 certainly got his work cut out for him then, because I do reckon that there could be some crazy stories coming out of LA this year about people punching each other or something in the locker room.
Well, I hope you're right. anything down that road's fine with me. I love a good side story.
Yeah, I don't see that either. It's basically our patriotic duty as Australians to try and figure out a way to fit Golden State into the playoffs this year. So how do you see it?
We do. With Big Bogut, well, hopefully his back's good. Hopefully everything about him's healthy. That's been his main problem. I have Golden State missing the playoffs. I think I got him right at 9th. I think they're going to be right around the 500 mark. But for them, it's all about health.
Yeah.
Bogut and Curry, Steph Curry, the glass ankles, those two together combined. I had a look today, they've played 28 of the last 132 games, so I don't know if you really want to bank on that. I think that they did well to get Jarrett Jack in. It was good insurance for Steph Curry if the ankles go again. And they did well with Tankabalooza throwing all those games at the end and getting Harrison Barnes in to fit the three. Perfect fit. And Klay Thompson, too, averaged over 18 points a game in his 29 starts last season. So they got a lot of options. They got a lot of tools they can utilize. Purely down to health, 100%.
Yeah, I've got him just sneaking in. We'll get to the full picture of the eight in a sec. Let's move on to the Southwest to wrap things up. So obviously you've got Dallas, Houston, Memphis, New Orleans, and San Antonio. I've got the Spurs up the top still. I can't see any way that they can't figure out how to keep this rolling.
Nah, Spurs are going to do what they do. Pop on the reins again. What's changed, really, there's no reason to think anybody else is going to jump them. Dallas, I think, they got Dirk's knees pretty much shot. They brought in four new starters, lost all their veteran guys. Memphis lost their OG Mad, didn't really bring anybody else in. They brought in Jared Bayless and tried to plug the outside shooting out with Wayne Ellington, who's another former Wolf.
I like Bayless. I mean, I've probably seen a little bit more of him than most people. I think he's kind of fits the way Memphis plays in a lot of ways. But
yeah, the only problem I have with Ellington is that he's listed as a sharpshooter, but his career, you know, in the league, shooting percentage 32% from three and 40% overall. So I don't know if there's much there, but and whenever he shoots it, it looks good. So I guess it's that.
If it looks pretty, then that helps a lot. So yeah, Spurs at the top. Then it's really Dallas and Memphis. Whether they sneak in, I don't know. I feel like Dallas could get there. I think they're actually going to finish higher than Memphis. Personally, you're really worried about Dirk's health.
That's pretty much it. Like, I had a fantasy draft the other week, and knowing me, you know, I took him first up. I was picking late in the first round. And the next day I woke up, and there's all these question marks that his knees completely stuffed. So that was good. But I like the pieces they brought in. Like, they're not – nobody there is a franchise guy, but they're all really good complementary pieces, like OJ Mayo, Chris Kaman, Darren Collison, Alton Brand, Dante Jones. These are all serviceable guys who, you know, who should be able to help Dirk get a team in the playoffs, provided that he's on the floor. So I think it's all down to Dirk. If Dirk's healthy, they're going to be a playoff team. I have them sneaking in at 7th or 8th spot. If not, I think, it'll be Memphis who kind of take that position. So Dirk's healthy, they'll be in. If not...
Yeah, I'd bank on Dirk's health before I banked on somebody like Zebo's health in Memphis. I think he just looked so bad last year. He couldn't even get off the floor.
He looked terrible when he came back, yeah.
So I like that, and I just think that there's actually a lot of similarities in the way Dallas and Memphis go, and I'd prefer, you know, Dirk as a bankable player over Marc Gasol or Rudy Gay if for those games where they just need to give it to somebody and get a win. So at the very least, I think that gives them a slight edge, but it's kind of hard to see at this point with all the health concerns.
Well, I learned a long time ago that, never bet against Dirk Nowitzki. He pretty much put my bank account in the red single-handedly when he destroyed Miami on his own in the finals back there. So I was waiting for that streak to end. Never happened. And he always seems to get it done against Oklahoma. Like, that series ended up being a complete whitewash. They got the brooms out against Oklahoma. I mean, Oklahoma did against Dallas, but that could have gone either way. Like, there was a few lucky bounces where Durant hit that game winner that bounced around the rim and dropped. And then Dallas went home and capitulated and got blown out when they had a big lead. So I don't know, that series is a lot closer than the 4-0 represents, but I think they can get back there. Like, Jason Kidd completely washed up, Jason Terry, same deal. Like, they didn't need to move these guys on, Amistine, Brendan Haywood too. I think Cayman's an upgrade anyway there, so I don't know, I think they, in a way, get better. They got a great coach too, so.
Yeah, and I think you can certainly get the most out of that cattle. So how about I ask you for your standings in the West, 1-8?
1-8?
Mm-hmm.
I've got Oklahoma at the one spot.
Mm-hmm.
Then the Lakers. I think Oklahoma's going to get them purely because they're going to have their girls on the floor more often. I think Lakers is all going to be at personnel management. So they'll be resting guys in certain spots, so they'll drop a game here and there. Third spot, I have San Antonio. I expect them to just roll through the season. At 4, getting the last home court spot, we have the Clippers. At 5, Denver. 6, which you'll hate. No, sorry. Yeah, 5, Denver at 6. I have Memphis. 7, Dallas. And 8, it's down in Utah, Minnesota.
Yeah, we're actually remarkably similar. So, yeah, I stuck Denver in fourth and the Clippers in fifth and Dallas in sixth and Memphis in seventh. So those are really much of a muchness at this point. And I just stuck Golden State in partially just because I think, I don't know. I feel like
I think they're going to get in if they're healthy. It's I think they've got talent across the floor. Like, their bigs, the reserve bigs are good. They've got Cole Andrew there who can bang. They're giving Beaters and Jefferson $40 million over the next 2 years, which isn't great, but that's not going to impact them at all on the court. So
yeah, I like the idea of Lee and Bogut on the court at the same time if they can keep them on there. They're both, you know, really try hard and have a reasonably high basketball IQ. So with good perimeter guys around that setup, it could be fun to watch.
Yeah, well, they're good complementary front court. Like, Bogut's going to be all about defense, and Lee's just going to be shooting his jumpers, getting the job done on the offensive end, which was a huge hole for them last year. Like, they were rotating, like, guys like Udoh and these rookies and stuff through the, just getting torched. So you get Bogut, the big anchor in there, if he can be healthy. Name a center on Golden State ever. I think it was a team one, maybe Ronnie Cicely when he was there for about 4 weeks back in the mid-90s, but... It's never happened, so yeah, for Golden State, I think it was a good trade they made. Monte Ellis, no big loss there really, I don't think. That's not a guy that's really a winner. So I don't think they really lost anything despite all the fans going berserk and hating the trade at the time. I think if Bogut's healthy on the floor, it's gonna be huge dividends and the team would be in the playoffs, so
it's gonna be good either way. How about we wrap up with a quick nod towards the awards? Who do you think is gonna win the MVP?
Yeah, pretty hard to go past the obvious one in LeBron, considering what happened last year. He's turned the corner. He's now this ridiculous, I don't know what he is, but he looks unstoppable. He's figured it out now. He's got the ring. He's got everything, all the monkey off the shoulder. There's really no excuse as to why he wouldn't win it. So, gotta go LeBron. As a smoky, I'd probably throw, I don't know, Rondo on there. I'm looking at, like, the odds now, and it's LeBron, Durant, and three Laker players in a row, and Dwight, Kirby, Nash, which is a bit weird. You've got Rondo way down there at $26. So.
Yeah, we in the East preview, we both mentioned Rondo. How about Rookie of the Year?
Good question. Everybody's throwing up Anthony Davis. I don't know, purely because he's not going to do much in the offensive end. Like, I'm a huge college basketball guy. I've seen all these guys play hundreds of times. The defensive end, he's going to impact every element of that side of the floor. I think he'll probably... He might be able to get in double digits. He should get around double digits in points per game. I think he'll do enough to get everyone's attention and to warrant winning Rookie of the Year. As an outsider, probably guys who are going to start directly. I think Lillard will be too inconsistent at Portland. I like Bradley Beal at Washington. Not quite sure if he will have the production to get it done. As an outsider, I like maybe even Austin Rivers. If you can get the starting job in New Orleans, and Deion Waiters too, they're both massive outsiders at $21. So Waiters is definitely going to start at Cleveland. He'll get plenty of shots, put up numbers. If you can find his feet early, he could climb that chart pretty quickly.
I think you're clearly forgetting the fact that Jonas Valanciunas is going to come in and become the defensive anchor for the Raptors and lead them to a potential wildcard
defense and Raptors doesn't really mesh too well. I saw Jonas play today. He had this huge dunk. It looked pretty cool. I was enjoy that, but I don't know. Still a project player for me. I think he's going to struggle a lot early, but I think, he's going to fit in well there, and I think he's a building block for the future and whatnot, so he's still a few years away, but yeah. Some impressive signs there.
Fingers crossed for me. Anyway.
You're a Raptors fan.
Yeah, my family live in Canada, so I don't have a choice.
Wow, how did that happen?
Yeah, well, I don't know. It's kind of like I support the Patriots, so it's good to support a crap team as well. Well, I'm glad to see you so psyched for the season, and hopefully we'll get you on in a couple of weeks to check in how it's all going.
Definitely, and I look forward to it. Appreciate it.
Good work, mate. All right, we'll talk to you later. All right,
catch up. Cool. Bye.
Okay, so just to put a bit of a cap on this NBA preview, I thought we'd call in another regular NBA commentator for the podcast, Luke Schofield, to chat a little bit about a contentious issue for the two of us. How are you, Luke?
I'm good, thank you.
That's good. So somebody who has been a long-time idol for both of us has been Steve Nash. I think it's fair to say that probably you are a slightly bigger devotee than I was. And then, of course, in the offseason, he's been traded to the Lakers, a team who we both despised over the last couple of years. But we've taken it different ways, Luke. Before we dive into the relative merits of of the trade and you know, the morality of it, perhaps. I just wanted to ask you quickly, is Steve Nash still going to be your favorite player in the NBA this season?
I don't know. I've always had trouble actually watching Lakers games, like unless they were playing, you know, a team that I was interested in seeing them play, like the Heat, or even then, I just generally wouldn't watch Lakers games. But this year, just the sheer enormity of this team makes me watch Lakers games. So I think based on how much I'll probably end up watching them, he might still well be.
I think I'm a little bit more definite than you, that I just can't see myself being able to bring myself to cheer for somebody in a Lakers uniform. I don't know if it's because I'm more spiteful than you or whatever, but I just can't. I can't see how I can do it. You've obviously managed to talk yourself into it. So how have you managed to do it, Luke?
I don't know. If you told me this 12 months ago that I would be at this point where I'm okay watching this, I would not have believed you. I've always wanted the Lakers to lose, and I'm not sure whether I actually want to see them win. Mm-hmm. But as someone who enjoys basketball, I don't see how this can go in any way but, you know, a fantastic spectacle.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And I am definitely looking forward to watching them play. But look, I think we can both agree that we wanted Steve Nash to leave Phoenix. It's just whether we wanted we wanted him to land in different spots. So, I mean, my whole point, and I've made it all along, is the whole, you know, fact that Steve Nash was speaking so unequivocally before the trade about how he'd never want to go to LA. You know, he said, I'm a bit old school. I think for me it'd be hard to pull on a Lakers jersey. And then he referenced Larry Bird and great rivalries and all that kind of stuff. So it just seemed like a real letdown to me that for someone who seemed to see himself as an old school NBA guy and a real team guy, that he would go to play for a great rival and seem to go to a team that would fly in the face of a lot of the things he would work towards as an NBA player.
And he's played the family card to do it as well, which is really quite remarkable, because normally I wouldn't buy that. Like, it would just sound, you know, hollow. But in this case, a guy who has, you know, like pushed through a lot, you know, like a lot of bad teams over the years, it's sort of hard to begrudge him this. Well, I guess it's not hard. You've managed to do it quite easily, but it's like I'm willing to accept that this is probably the only situation, you know, where he got like both a chance to win and, you know, a chance like to be closer to his family.
Yeah, the family card was certainly at the very least, it was a crafty political move. I'll give him that. It's kind of like his Livestrong, I guess, where you can't really criticize him for wanting to be close to his kids. But what do you feel about the fact that he's gone from, you know, a situation where he was so into ball movement and into what Simmons would call the secret, to going to one of the real, you know, black hole kind of units that we've seen in the last couple of seasons?
Well, that's the advantage of playing for a team coached by Mike Brown. It's not like they actually have an offense.
Yeah.
So anything he brings, like if he basically walks in and ends up more or less being the offensive coordinator, that would be fantastic. And I mean, it doesn't matter so much anyway now, because with losing Bynum and getting Dwight, who are like, they are extremely difficult, different players. Like, Dwight's happy. Bynum demands to be fed the ball down low. You know, Dwight's an exceptional rebounder. Bynum's nearly good on his day, and like, they are going to be a radically different team. Even if that's not necessarily the style of play that he's been playing in Phoenix for all that time.
So how do you think this will go? I mean, there's so many people on that offense. I mean, even though Nash isn't, you know, a ball hog, he's still somebody who is a scorer and will want to chip in himself. Do you think that this is a situation where he comes in and turns this into an offensive juggernaut, or do you think there'll be teething problems with trying to work everybody in?
Kobe wants to become the highest NBA point scorer, and the reality is the quickest way for him to get there is for Steve Nash to come in, run pick and what role with Dwight or Powell, and Kobe to stand in the corner and pop threes.
Do you think Kobe understands that?
I think when Kobe has his first, you know, 40-point game with most of his points coming from uncontested jump shots, he'll be a little bit more persuasive. And I mean, this is the thing. I don't claim to know how this will go. Like, this could end up being just like the 2004 Lakers team where they just have so much talent on a team. And that team was the same kind of thing. Like they had Horace Grant coming off the bench, much in the same way that they've now got Antoine Jameson coming off the bench. They've just got like that, like the roster is that packed, but at the same time, there's still, you know, an incredible potential for it to implode. And that's what I can't wait for. Like it's either going to end up being, because I presume Miami will be, you know, by far the most likely team to make it to the finals. So we've got either a Miami Lakers matchup, which is something that we've wanted to see for, you know, the last 5 years. Well, you know, a LeBron Kobe matchup.
Yep.
And or we're going to end up with a rematch of last year's finals with the Thunder and the Heat going at it again with the Thunder a year older and Dwayne Wade just that little bit more broken down.
Yeah. And potentially Harden with his last shot at the ring for a little while as well. So that could spice things up. So finally, just you've touched on it before, but I've got to ask you. I mean, you know. We've both said for a long time we really want to see Steve Nash get a ring. You know, he's now made it to the most conference finals, I think, without ever getting to the NBA finals. So do you not feel like it'd kind of be pissing in your victory beer a little bit if you see Kobe Bryant raising the finals MVP trophy, which I think you'd have to if they won, for Steve Nash to get a ring? Is that a deal with the devil you're prepared to do?
Perhaps. It could also be hilarious if somehow it ended up being Dwight and, you know, Kobe, like Kobe's window is the number one Laker, just closed that little bit earlier. I think there would just be that fantastic look on Kobe's face that he sort of realizes that it might not be his team anymore if that was to happen. But yeah, Steve Nash has gone from a situation where he was clearly, you know, the best player on his team to a situation where he might be the most important player on the team, but he's, you know, probably number four in terms of actual like output, aside from, you know, the whole assist thing.
Mm-hmm. So, but you're prepared to make that trade to see Kobe equal MJ in rings, just so our boy can get one?
Not for a second do I buy the argument that Kobe's even close to MJ, and I think counting rings is, you know, very much an arbitrary thing. I mean, if MJ had played 3 more years with Shaq, then he'd probably have a couple extra as well.
Yes, but you know what will happen if he gets to 6.
Yes, all the Lakers fans. I'm not saying I'll be happy if that happens, but a little part of me will smile.
Okay. Well, you're a better man than me because I can't bring myself to do it. I've still got my Nash jersey. I'm still, I don't know. Maybe I'll have to wake up in a coma one morning and cheer for him and then forget about it or something, but I can't do it.
I don't understand how I've gotten to this point so quickly. Like, I know, I'm not sure you'll actually get there, but, you know, in terms of the 5 or 7 stages of grief or whatever it is,
yeah.
I've skipped most of them and I've just come straight to acceptance.
Yeah, you might have built this all on a house of cards though, Luke. You might end up in therapy in a month. Anyway, that was good. I'm glad we got to chat about that on the podcast, and hopefully we'll have you on soon to check in on how the season's going. Well, that'll do it for our NBA preview. I really hope you enjoyed it. I'll be back on Monday with Kirk to break down a topical issue and do our NFL previews. Until then, I'm Eric George and that's Sports Polygamy. Thanks for listening. See ya.